much.
Yeah, 220 average, and having about 750 at bats, that's pretty good.
Well, the last 2 years, that really went down. I didn't hit well. I don't know, my eyesight, I guess, had something to do with it. But 2 or 3 years there, I hit the ball pretty good. Mm-hmm. I know you're talking about Babe Ruth, Dad, so you got the base hit there, but I shut out the Yankees last game of the 1941 season. Got two doubles, I know. And I know one stretch there, I had five straight hits. And I know a couple of times I got a base hit, Luke Easter's playing first base. He said, well, you're a pretty good hitter, aren't you? But I thought I was a pretty decent hitter. I could make contact, and I didn't have any power, but I could make hit line drives.
Who are some of the tougher guys that you faced when you were pitching? Who were the guys?
Well,
you
there's a lot of tough guys, but I got out some of the better hitters better than I did some of the other hitters, and I guess that's the way it is.
I think you concentrated more.
I'm sure I did. Probably bearing down a little better against some of the other hitters. I know DiMaggio. I pitched against him in that streak two or three different times, and I got knocked out of there in one game, I know. Anyway, he didn't have a hit, so he got a base hit in the ninth inning in one of those games. I got it off of Arnold Anderson, a relief pitcher we had. But, of course, Williams is a terrific hitter and all that, but some guys like Larry Doby hit me good for about 3 years. Then it changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yogi Berra was one of the toughest ones for me.
Well, he never swung at a ball in the strike zone.
Well, that's the whole trouble. He used to say to me, hey, Sid, when you pitching? And Bobby Doerr hit me good in Boston, but not in Washington. But he had just enough to hit that fence out there all the time. But guys like that. And some of the other guys, they didn't hit me that well. And I know DiMaggio, in 1941, they won the pennant, beat Brooklyn in the World Series. And I pitched the last game of the season against him and shut him out. And he said, I got a little quote, and I have it in my scrapbook, that there wasn't a pitcher on the Brooklyn staff that showed him as much stuff as I did in the last game of the season. So I thought that was a pretty nice compliment.
Very nice
from him.
Yeah. Let me just throw a couple of names at you, and the first thing that comes into your head here when we close out this side of the tape. How about Bobo Newsom?
Yeah, Bobo was quite a character, as everybody knew. And he was a fun guy, and he was a real character. Of course, he called everybody Bobo, and I tell you, he had an amazing arm. And he could throw hard. He was a good pitcher. Crazy, of course, with it. But I saw him pitch an 11-inning game one day in Cleveland. Come out the next day, and we were all standing out there in front of the dugout playing catch, and he comes up to me, and I'm playing catch with somebody, and he said, here, let me throw one. He took a big windmill wind-up, and it was as hard as he could throw it. I swear, if that had been me, the arm had gone with it, I guess. But he was funny to be with, and it was never a dull moment around Bobo Newsom.
How about Burt Sheppard? You weren't there, I guess,
yes.
In 45 when he came back and pitched, but I guess he was here in spring training of 46.
I was with him. He spent 1 year there when I was there, but he didn't pitch. Mm-hmm. We threw a lot of batting practice. I saw him pitch one day. I believe it was in, I thought it was in New York, but I'm not positive now where it was. He saw him batting practice, and that foot broke off of the stump, you know. And quite a few people around here. Boy, they couldn't have, man, well, look, and then foot come off.
How about there was an outfielder for Washington that was known as being kind of somewhat dangerous to some of the other players, I guess George Case in particular. His name was George Binks.
Yeah, George
Bingo.
Oh, he was a nice guy, yeah. Pretty good player. But I don't think he's going to bother George, though. Mm-hmm. George was quite a guy.
Did he have a penchant for running into other players? Or
no, I don't remember any part of that about him. No.
How about, just one more. What was Jimmy Pearsall like when he was very, very young, when he joined the Red Sox?
I'll tell you, for about 3 years, he was one of the best outfielders I ever saw defensively. He could really go get that ball. And he wasn't a bad hitter. Yeah. But then he got a little goofy after that, I guess, and he'd come up to you, get right up in your face and look at you and say, you don't think I'm crazy, do you? And, you know, nighttime, like in hotels, you know, he'd come around knocking on your doors. We wouldn't ever let him in, you know, especially late at night, you know. You would never get rid of him, I guess. But he had his moments, I'll tell you. He was quite a character. I saw where he went to work with somebody the other day in the paper.
Yeah, he seems like I believe he's a minor league hitting instructor for the Cubs or somebody.
I believe that's right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see that. He was a good guy, though. All right.
So tell me about some of the guys that you roomed with. Do you have any great stories that you remember?
Well, I roomed with several different players. Roomed with Mickey Vernon. Of course, he was a nice, real nice guy. And anything you wanted to do, he'd go right along with you. Like to go to the movies, and that's what we used to do a lot. Cecil Travis was another guy like him, same type. And I roomed with him some. Room with Jay Curley, Al Evans, two catchers with Washington, and they like to have a beer, but other than carousing around, we didn't do that. And Boston, room with Hoot Evers and Ray Scarborough, and Hoot was a nice guy, and he liked to have a couple of beers too, Ray Scarborough, you know, he was the umpire baiter. He was quite a character on the field, but he was a pretty good pitcher. Of course, he was quiet the day he pitched. but he kept on those umpires all the time. But really, we never did do anything exciting except we go to movies. And of course, the big thing back then, we'd eating dinner, get a good place to go eat, have a nice dinner. That was the evening for us. So really, truly, I never had anybody that was talked all the time or snored or
didn't room with anybody's suitcase
and all that. You know,
did management purposely room pitchers and pitchers or pitchers and catchers together?
Not necessarily, but it just so happened I did room with pitchers most of the time. But I always had a roommate. You know, in other words, I'd sleep by myself at night, like some of them had too, I'm sure. I didn't have to room with Ellis Kinder. You know, he was a dandy. And, of course, he liked that bottle pretty good.
Yeah.
But I used to have a locker next to him. He was funny.
You played most of your career in Washington, and then you wound up in Boston. Where was your favorite place to pitch? Where'd you have the best luck? Was it Griffith Stadium or...
Oh, I'd say I had the best luck in Detroit and Cleveland.
Really? Detroit? It was as small as that place was?
Sure did. It seemed like I pitched good there.
Like, as you understand, Cleveland Municipal Stadium.
Well, yeah, I like that. Of course, Washington was okay, but I think you get a little careless, you know, in those big parks like that. Of course, Cleveland, when they didn't have a fence inside there when I was pitching, and just throw a high hard one, and that center fielder go get it, you know. But... Boston, you had to be careful. I didn't mind pitching Boston. I know I after I got up there, I found out I'd been pitching wrong up there all the time.
Well, what did you...
See, when I was with Washington, I used to talk about all those right-hand hitters they had and square around up there at bat trying to hit that fence out there. And we'd pitch away from them. That was wrong because they'd just reach out and flick their wrist and, you know, hit up against that fence. And when I got up there, I said the way to pitch them is all inside. And if they pull it, foul. And then the third baseman, left fielder, get a lot of ground balls out that way. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it's true. It happened that way. And I pitched a lot better after I got up there than I did before. I was pitching up there one night and Game went along, one nothing. We finally got a run, I think, in the eighth inning and seventh inning. And then the eighth inning, I had a man on third base and two outs. And next batter grounded at shortstop, and he threw a short hop at first base. And Sam Bigley played first base, dropped the ball, tied, run scored. And in the next, and it ended up like, I mean, the ninth inning, Ted Williams. He had a man on second, two outs, and Williams was a hitter. And Joe Kuehl was the manager, and he'd come up the mound, and Gene Stevens was the next hitter. I said, Joe, let me walk Williams, and I said, I'll pitch to Stevens. I used to write a hitter, I can get him out. He said, you're not going to pitch to him, you're going to pitch to Williams, and you better not walk him. And I pitched him, got a base hit.
Managers are a strange breed, aren't they?
I know the next day we were playing, and the manager, or the one of the coaches, Clyde Mylan, mm-hmm. and he's telling me, he said, Tart Griffith called Joe that night. I mean, the next day, rather, he had me warming up in the bullpen after I'd pitched those 9 innings the night before. And then the next day, he said that Mr. Griffith called and talked to Joe, and he told him that if he ever tried that again, he wouldn't manage anymore. You know, so you and the guys aren't doing that. You know,
Was there a place that was your least favorite to pitch in the big leagues?
Like I said, I enjoyed Cleveland and Detroit, and of course I like Washington. Sure, don't have that big park.
Oh, I meant least like, favorite.
Least favorite.
One that you hated to pitch in, you never had any luck. Or
I like Yankee Stadium. I guess the worst place, I guess, was I like to pitch in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. First of all, it was always hot, and the Diamond Sea was the Cardinals also playing there. Big game every day, as hard as a rock. And infield, there wasn't much grass left on
torn
it.
Torn up.
Yeah. And that's the worst place, I guess, that I enjoyed pitching.
Mm-hmm. How about some umpires? We talked a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite umpire? Did you have a least favorite, a guy who was squeezing you all the time?
McGowan was my favorite umpire.
Throwing the ball straight.
I thought he was the best one, especially ball or strike. Some of the rest of them were fine, but some I didn't especially like. But I know Cal Hubbard, he seemed to have a lot of my games. And I was pitching a game in St. Louis one night, and I'm having my problems, and can't get anybody out, and arguing with him. Think, every pitch you throw, you think's a strike, and he's calling balls. And so after the fourth inning comes along, and they take me out and bring in the pitcher. And I go by Hubbard on the way out, and I said, Cal, I said, you're really terrible tonight. I said, I've never seen you miss so many pitches. I said, you were just terrible, the worst game I ever saw you call or pitch. I called. He said, well, Sid, he said, yours must be worse than mine, because he said, you're leaving and I'm staying, and I get the hell out of here.
That's a pretty good line.
Another time, Red Jones was a character umpire and real likable fella. And he was umpiring a game in Detroit. Ossie Bluegee was a manager for us. And Ray Scarborough was on him, everybody was, but Ray, you could hear him all over the ballpark. Anyway, about third inning, he came over to the bench, and he said, Ozzie, he said, if you don't quiet him down, he said, I'm going to run them all in the clubhouse. And Ozzie said, come on, fellas, let's let up a little bit, But anyway, they kept on. And a couple days later, he come back to the bench, he said, Scarborough, get out of here. Ozzie went running out, and he said, Red, he said, Scarborough's in the center field bullpen. He isn't on the bench. He said, I didn't say Scarborough, I said Evans. And right away he thought of Al Evans. And we all died laughing, of course. But there was Hurley. Hurley was the one that every time he umpired behind you, I'll guarantee you the game would be 3 hours long. It had to be just like that. He was amazing. He umpired the longest games, I believe, of any umpire that I knew of. I didn't like him back there.
So you liked to pitch fast then?
Well, sure. He pitched better. But he just ball one, ball two, and you knew half of them were strikes, and
it
wasn't, much fun with him. But there were some good ones, though. At McGowan, I know the first year I was there, well, I bet in like a little jam, and he'd be, you know, only two umpires then, and he'd be standing behind you, have men on base, and be in a jam, he'd say, hey, Sid, let's see you get out of this now. Yeah, he'd talk to you like that, see. Of course, nowadays you wouldn't even find any of them to do that, because you could argue with them a little bit back then, have a little fun with them.
So that leads me to my next question. Were you ever tossed out of a game?
Not during the season. Not as a player. I did when I was coaching.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can't think of his name right now. Cleveland one night. I went out and talked to the pitcher or something, and I was arguing with the umpire a little, and I told him, I said, you must think you're Jesus Christ out here tonight. And he said, I am tonight. I said, get out of here. He threw me out of the game, see. Another time up here at Rangers, they got in a big argument up there one night, and I'm just standing there on the bench, and after the argument was all over, why, umpire, he looked over that way, you know, and I just stand in the dugout, and I just said, what's going on, just like that. He said, Hudson, get out of here. So the catcher asked him, said, why are you throwing Sid out? He said, well, I was going to throw somebody out, and he's the first one I saw. So that's the only two times I was ever thrown out.
You remember any good fights?
Well,
you ever hit somebody and they come after you, or?
No, I hit Berardino.
Johnny Berardino.
Second baseman. Well, I didn't hit him. I knocked him down, and I floored him, and he took about two steps toward the mound, but that's all. He went back. But that's the only one I ever had taken any steps. And I've thrown at a few of them, but I never tried to throw at anybody's head or anything.
Yeah.
But they had some fights while I was pitching. And I saw more as a coach than I did when I was pitching. When I was a coach, I stayed away from them.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to get mixed up. I had better sense than that. But never really, I didn't ever have a fight. And they had one in Washington there one time, but it was before we got there, they said it was one of the worst ones they'd ever had. And, they were fighting all over the place, but we just had those little scuffles, you know, and arguing more than anything else.
When you played, I remember talking to a couple of guys in the St. Louis Browns, their names escape me now, but a couple of guys said when they got knocked down, they were so bad, when they got knocked down, they considered it an honor they were that bad. But how did it go from when you were playing and it was, you guys knew when they were going to get knocked down and they kind of expected it and they'd get up and they'd brush themselves off and they'd go out. How did it go from that to what you have now? Now a guy throws somebody inside and...
That's a good question. Like you said, the fellows knew when they were going to get knocked down and they expected it. And I thought it always made them better hitters if you knocked them down, because I've seen some of them, you knock them down, boy, they get brush off and get up and get in that box and they're determined then. But the way they do it nowadays, I don't understand it. I mean, you can't even pitch inside. You throw a ball 6 inches inside and they're ready to come out and fight you, challenge you out there. And I just don't understand it. I don't know what's wrong with them, what their thinking is on that. Of course, this past season up there, that guy come out after Ryan, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, Robin Ventura.
Hidden hold on him and pound him in the chin. That's kind of funny.
That was pretty amusing.
But I don't understand that. I don't know why that every time you kind of even come close to you, why they want to come out and fight the pitcher.
The pitcher's certainly entitled to that part of the plate.
Well, really and truly, you have to pitch inside in order to get some hitters out, because most of those hitters nowadays, they're own weights and they're strong and you get it out of where they can extend those arms, or they're gonna hit the ball hard. And you can't pitch inside. The umpires won't let you, really. And the umpires warn them. They even come close, you know, inside that far, and they warn you. And, I don't know. It's a different game today.
How about the traveling and life on the road, and then tell me what effect it had on you, and then what effect it had on your wife and everybody back
there? Traveling was... we thought trains were fine, of course, because we were all together, we had togetherness, and played cards, and had a big time on the trains when, you know, after a ball game, we'd get on a train and take off. And well, I enjoyed them, and it wasn't the best sleeping in the world, but you get used to it, and it was all right. But planes, of course, coaching, I was in the planes quite a bit, but as a player, just a few flights. Boston, we flew some. Mm-hmm. And Boston on a train, I had a bedroom all the time. And that was not with the train, that was across, you know. And it was longer, and I was tall, of course, longer, and that was a pretty good bed. I enjoyed that more than the old sleeping berth, but we always had the lower berth. We had the car by ourselves, and nobody bothered you. And it was a lot of fun on those trains. And had good food, good steaks on them, and good breakfast. Food was delicious.
Did you ever have your family with you, or were they always here while you were playing?
No, not on the train with me, no. They might make a trip with us once in a while.
Oh, I see.
But I go to New York, you know, or someplace like that. But of course, you just, back then, we'd take a Western trip, we'd be gone about 2 weeks, you know. And of course, I don't think they're gone like that nowadays. And that was a long time to be away from family, especially with little ones, you know, coming along. And but I had a pretty good wife, and she didn't seem to mind. She took care of the home front. She's not here right now. She's gone to the beauty shop, I think. Mm-hmm. But mostly, of course, flying on planes, like when I was coaching, you get on the plane, and they all got to have the radios with their earplugs and all that, you know, and you never see them anymore the next day at the ballpark. You know, they apparently sleep all day, you know. It wasn't that way when I was playing.
Yeah.
We used to get up and walk around town, wherever you were, and maybe do a little shopping or things like that, and then you got your regular meals, but they don't do that nowadays.
Seems like they're going in 25 different directions.
Oh, you never see them.
How about the equipment that you played with is certainly quite a bit different from what they're playing with today.
I don't think so.
Really?
I disagree with you.
Okay.
The biggest difference I see in equipment is uniforms. Now, they're a lot better, but they're hotter. Mm-hmm. This material now they put in them, they're hot.
Polyester. Yeah.
Polyester, they're hot. In my day, now, when I first went to Washington, uniforms were wool, of course, and pretty heavy then. But later on, like in Boston, we wore 100% wool, shirt and pants, but they only weighed 4 ounces apiece. And once you got it wet with perspiration, then it would absorb all the perspiration. But that thing they wear today doesn't. And as far as the bats, I don't see the difference in the bats today as in my day. Baseballs, same. Seems like
gloves have got to be a little bit bigger.
One. Well, I don't know. I had a Mort Cooper model glove, and I'll show you a glove I have bronzed in there. That it's not much difference than they are today. Only difference was when I first started, they weren't stringed. The fingers weren't strung together.
Separately.
Of course, now they are. But I had some as a pitcher strung together too. But of course, diamonds are different. I mean, I'd say they're in better shape today than they were then. And of course, they have AstroTurf, which makes a silly game out of it.
Yeah, you don't like AstroTurf, and neither do I. I was going to ask you about the designated hitter, what you thought of that.
I don't
sure
like
you hate that too.
I don't like it. I don't think the manager has any strategy to make moves that he can make. And who was to pitch, and now you never get to hit?
And
I don't like that at all. But really and truly, I don't see that much difference in the equipment. Of course, it's got to be a little better.
Yeah.
Everything is a little better than it was then. We thought it was pretty good back then.
When you played and you had a doubleheader, I guess you played a lot of Sunday doubleheaders back in those days. Between the first and the second game, you'd come back into the clubhouse, and what was waiting for you? There was no lavish spread that these guys have today. If you had something to eat, you had to pay for it yourself, and had the clubhouse guy go get it.
We had a rule on the ball club. We played doubleheader. when Joe Kuehl was manager, we could have a piece of ice cream, you know, mm-hmm. give you a little, it cost a dime, I think, a little sandwich ice cream, and that's all you could eat between games. And of course, after the game, there's nothing to eat in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. Everybody might have a beer after the game was over with.
But that was it.
That was it. Mm-hmm. And we never had any spreads in the clubhouse like I saw when I was coaching, see. That was unheard of. Well, see, there used to be a clubhouse man, or he'd be there with a pencil around the Coke, where they kept the Cokes and, yeah. And the beer and stuff.
In the cooler.
Cooler, every time you had one, he'd mark it up on you, see. You had to pay for all that, see.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Quite a bit different. How'd you get along with the managers that you had?
Very good.
Bucky Harris.
Yeah, I thought he was the greatest manager I ever played for.
Okay.
And I thought he was a little jump ahead of all the rest of them I played for. He is all figured out way ahead of time always. And he was quite a guy. And I just thought the world of him.
And you had him twice. I guess he managed and then he left and came
same
back.
Same both times. And he'd sit you down and talk to you and man to man and like it should be. He was well liked, period. And he didn't say a whole lot. We had a meeting one time in opening day in Washington, and he had a meeting with the pitchers. And he said, all of you must be big leaguers, you're here. And he said, I expect one thing out of you. He said, don't walk them. Just throw strikes, let them hit the ball, and you can pitch for me. And he said, I can't say this. He said, I don't care how you get them out or how you throw it, but if you can get them out, you can pitch for me.
To paraphrase. How about Ozzie Bluegee?
Yeah, Ozzie was a nice guy, too. Of course, he was coach before he became manager and of course, player. But he was quite a player, too, some kind of fielder. And as a manager, he treats you real nice, treats you like a man, and I liked Ozzie very much. In fact, I had a card today, from a Christmas card from his wife. And we were pretty close over those years.
How about Joe Kuehl?
I didn't care that much for Joe.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I know one time he got mad at all of us pitchers, and he didn't think we were working hard enough, weren't running enough. Mm. And so he said, used to hit fungos to us all the time. That's the way they would run us in the outfield, you know, you run from center to left or whatever. And he said, I'm going to start running. And so he ran us one day there, two or three days at a time, and I mean for all during batting practice. And we wore him out, that fungo, of course. And he finally quit. He said, oh, I can't take it myself. But anyway, he was running there to death. We couldn't get anybody out there for a couple, 3 weeks. And we all just kind of quit because we knew we were tired, you know, and we never got enough rest. So I didn't like Joe as the best manager.
So you'd vote for Bucky Harris for the guys that you played for. Was there anybody that you would have liked to have played for? Anybody was managing at the time?
Well, I thought maybe I'd like to play with Joe McCarthy. Yeah. I know I was on the All-Star team there, and he was manager, and I know in that game we played in Cleveland I was telling you about, like, of course he was manager and got to talk to him some, and I thought maybe I would like to play for him.
How well do you know Connie Mack?
Not that well, no, but he must have been something too. I remember one time I was in Chicago, in Chicago, and we had an off day. We'd come in there the night before and had an off day, and they were playing Philadelphia. And I got on the elevator that morning going down to have breakfast, and Connie Mack was on the elevator. And I said, good morning, Mr. Mack. And he said, good morning, young man. Two or three floors down, why, Elmer Vallo got on. That's one of his players, you know. And he said, good morning, Mr. Mack. He spoke to me, and he said, Connie spoke to him, looked at him, he said, hey, son, said, haven't I seen you someplace before? I never will forget that. I have his autograph in there on the book in there.
It's a good story. How about, how'd you get along with Mr. Griffith, and then how'd you get along with Tom Yawkey?
Well, I was. I got along good with Clark Griffin. He treated me fine.
Yeah.
He treated you like a father. But, you know, like in what kind of year you had, by you were going to get maybe a $500 raise or maybe a $1,000 raise, and that's the way he tried to take care of you. And he was interested in you. He was interested in your family. I know when I first went there, the first time he sat me down and talked to me, and he said, young man, he said, you ought to find you a nice girl somewhere and get married and raise a family. And so he was all for families and taking care of the fellows. The Yawkey was fine. I was player representative up there, and I had quite a few talks with him. And he treated me fine. And he was pretty good to all the players. They liked him.
Mm-hmm.
All the players did.
It's the impression I get from I've been reading.
Yeah.
How about your first year of 1940, you playing with Washington, what kind of money were you making that year?
Well, when I got a contract during the winter, coming from Class D ball, I got a contract for $200 a month. I went spring training, and then the season started, and I drew one payday of $100. And then they called me in the office and said, we think you deserve a little more than that. And so they upped me a little bit. And then after I started, they won those six games in a row. And then they called me in again and raised it a little more. So I ended up making $3,000 for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a $3,000 raise for the next year, $6,000 my second year. Won 17, lost 16, and I got a $3,000 raise. And I won 13, lost 14, and I got $2,000 raise.
Oh, well, heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
What was the most you made in any one year?
$17,000.
So, and what year was that?
2 years in a row.
Oh.
Boston.
The most you made. Was there such a thing when you played as meal money or anything like that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In Washington, we just signed checks. You ate your dinner in the hotel.
Oh, I see.
Just sign your name. Eat anything you wanted to, sign your name. In Boston, we got some meal money. Most of the time, we got meal money in Boston. And I can't remember what we got. It wasn't, of course, anything like it was. I coached, and I know you were getting about $25, you know, when I started mm-hmm. coaching. And of course, it's up about $75 or whatever it is.
Yeah, quite a bit today.
Yeah. But that part was good. Either way, didn't make any difference. Of course, getting meal money made it convenient to go eat wherever you wanted to, but otherwise you had to eat in the hotel
restaurant.
Yeah.
How about during any sort of salary negotiations, were you ever promised anything that was taken back later on and maybe you felt a little
like yep.
you had some bad
in
feelings?
1950, you know, I won 14, lost 14. In the end of the season, about a week before it ended, Mr. Griffin called me in the office and said, Sid, you've had a good year for me. He said, I think you deserve a bonus. So I said, well, thank you. And anyway, he said, what do you think you deserve? Well, it kind of floored me there. I didn't know what to say. And I said, well, surely I ought to get $1,000 and all. And he said, well, if time tax is taken out, he said, that won't be much. I think you deserve $2,000. So he gave me a $2,000 raise, a bonus. So the next year, I don't remember what I made that year. I think I was making, I don't know, about $14,000 or something like that. And I was trying to get a $2,000 raise at the end of the season. Of course, I kind of thought about it later and knew that that was my raise for the next year, that $2,000. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he wouldn't give it to me. And he finally gave me $1,000, agreed to $1,000, and I'm still holding out for that $2,000. And we're in spring training now. It's the day before practice starts. And I'm in his office, and he wouldn't give it to me. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, how about a bonus clause? If we draw 1 million people, I get an extra $1,000. And he said he didn't like to do that. He said he didn't like to sign his players with those kind of clauses. But he finally agreed to it. So he paid me at that rate all year long. Season ended, and I didn't think anything about it, and I knew we were close to 1 million people. And we had a game rained out with the Yankees and had a full house in Washington and rained it out, and I lost that, and I knew it was really close.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the end of the season ended, and he didn't say anything to me, and I went on home, and about a month later, I get a letter from Calvin Griffin. He said, according to Uncle, he called Clark Uncle, he said, according to Uncle, your agreement you had with him, you owe us $1,000. And he didn't say how many people they had drawn or anything. And I didn't write him back. I wrote Mr. Griffin a letter back, and a sob story letter, and, you know, about how I needed the money. But I would like to know how many people we did draw. We like 3,000 and some other people drawn $1,000,000, and I had to send him $1,000. So I sent it back.
It's quite a story. And I guess the stories about the Griffins haven't changed much over the years. How about superstitions? Were you superstitious at all?
Not really. Not really. No, I never was really superstitious.
How about anybody that you played with? Do you remember anybody, a certain guy being superstitious and what he did? Or?
Yeah, yes. Bobo Newsom was quite superstitious. He'd always go out to the mound, he'd start out the mound, he'd never step on the chalk line. He'd walk over and he'd pick up dirt on each side of it before he went to the mound. But I never had any of those kind of traits. Don't remember having anything like that, being superstitious about anything.
How about, can you pick out, well, we talked about some pretty nice games early on, a couple of one-hitters and then a game against Grove. Do you have one game that you remember that sticks out above all the rest of them?
Yeah. Started a game in Cleveland first year and in Cleveland, and I walked the first three hitters. Next guy, batter got a base hit. I walked three more, and I'm gone. And we get beat that day about 24-4.